Welcome to our RCM podcast, Revenue Retainers. Glad to have David here on this. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Pleasure being here.
David, where are you calling from today?
I am sitting in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, just outside of the capital city of Harrisburg.
All right. Awesome. That's a historical place. David, tell us about your background, who you are, what do you do?
Well, I've been in healthcare for 25 years. Prior to that, I ran an awful lot of restaurants on the East Coast. But I run a full-service practice management consulting firm. We work mostly with medical clients, medical practices, facilities, all types of organizations that are independently run by physicians and or other providers. We tend not to deal too much with hospitals or health system, hospital-owned practices and that sort.
Wonderful. In this podcast, we will focus on revenue cycle-related functions. As you coach, as you advise, as you help, you know, your customers, talk to me, what are some of the RCM functions that you usually help with? And then what are some of the challenges and solutions that you offer?
Well, the things that we help with is really basically changing revenue cycle from the way everyone runs it, which in my opinion is a reactive process. Everybody chases money. They send statements out. They call patients to collect on account. All their processes and systems that they have in place are all about chasing money. We're the only industry in America that chases money. You go to a grocery store, pay for your groceries before you walk out. Same thing if you get gas, you do anything. In most cases, even if you hire a contractor to do work on your house, they usually require payment up front or a portion of it, and then they collect the balance at the end. Medicine is the only one that doesn't collect anything from the patient other than copays. Yet some practices don't even collect those up front.
True.
So it has never worked. That whole reactive process is all about setting yourself up for failure, and you're chasing money, so you're always trying to get your money into the bank, and that is not the way any business should be run. So what we do is we try to change all that and put in proactive revenue cycle processes and policies. And I'm happy to discuss a lot of that more if you'd like me to.
Yeah, please go ahead. Just, I love this analogy that, you know, a lot of other industries, they're trying to get cash today, money today. And here in this industry, it's after the fact and it's super reactive. And a lot of times there is a lot of challenges with collecting those and then sending it over to collections. And now you're getting cents to the dollar. So walk me through the entire RCM process. How do you engage and how do you actually solve the problem?
Well, any client that comes to us, we get an awful lot of clients that want revenue cycle assessments, determining whether their billing staff or billing company is doing their job properly. Once we go in and start doing an assessment, we can, and we're requiring copies of policies, procedures, job descriptions, you name it, everything. We look at the KPIs, we look at every claim that's submitted. And honestly, reactive revenue cycle is all about, think of it this way. Most practices don't have financial policies that they have their patients sign. So you have nothing that holds the patient accountable for their responsibilities. And that's wrong. Every patient should know exactly what their responsibilities are. Every patient should be required to keep a debit or credit card on file. That way, if they don't pay, you've got, or if they don't pay from a statement, which I don't even suggest sending statements out. You don't need to. There's no law that requires it. But you need to communicate with patients what they owe and be able to collect that money. So in order to do that, having a financial policy documented, and then in that financial policy stating that you require a debit or credit card on file. We practice what we preach. We do the same thing for our clients that we suggest to them that they do in their practice. So if you have a credit card on file or a debit card on file that the patient signed off on and authorized you to charge up to a certain amount every month until their balance is paid off, that automatically guarantees you payment the minute that balance hits their account. And then you can either set it up in your merchant services system to either automatically charge on the same date each month or to go in and process that charge yourself. But you also have requirements because you have PCI compliance, which requires that you don't maintain credit card information on a piece of paper in your practice. It needs to be maintained by the banking or financial institution that you're using for your merchant services. So if you do it that way, you've automatically got that collected. Other processes that you can put in place, having a no-show fee if patients don't show, that's a good way of making sure that they're going to pay a fee if they cause a gap in your schedule by not showing up for the service. But what's even better is if you have a credit or a debit card on file, you can either charge that no-show fee, because if it's a brand new patient, you're never going to collect that no-show fee from that patient that never showed up. Chances are they'll never show up to your practice. So you can also charge very similar to what restaurants charge when you want to make a reservation. They charge a fee for you to hold that reservation. You're allowed legally to charge a fee to hold that appointment. But that fee, once that patient shows up, should automatically be appended to their copay. So let's say you charge a no-show fee of $150. And no-show fee should be difficult and hard for the patient to swallow. If they're like $25, no patient's going to care about a $25 charge. So they will still not show up for their appointments. So if you charge $150 and let's say you're a specialist and your copay is $60, upon showing up at the practice for their visit, the patient would be reimbursed the $110, which would be the difference from their copay. Actually, it'd be $90 if the charge was $150 to hold the appointment. So the copay would be $60. You pay them back $90 at the time of the appointment. And you need to pay it back then because every state has escheatment laws that require you not to hold credited amounts for patients on account. You have to return that back to the patient in the proper time period based on what the state escheatment laws are. So there are a lot of compliance requirements on this, and making sure that you set up all these proactive policies in the proper manner so that you can collect your money when it's due and get it right into your bank account. That's what I'm talking about in being proactive revenue cycle.
I love that.
That's just one example.
Yeah, no, I mean, those are some golden nuggets. Talk to me about just taking the process a little bit back up, which is when you're doing insurance verification, from what I see, that if you don't do that right, you will have a higher portion of claim rejections and denials. Talk to me. Talk to me about what are some strategies that, medical offices, dental offices or clinics can use to mitigate that and then be able to do, what are some of the best practices?
Well, first of all, every practice, no matter whether you're medical, dental, doesn't matter, you should be doing insurance verification and eligibility of benefits verification. It should be done electronically. No staff member should be spending time on the internet or on a phone trying to verify this, because it can all be done overnight. If you either subscribe or contract with your clearinghouse or your billing software, everyone has an electronic verification of insurance and eligibility of benefits, but there are even better options. So there's a company called Inovalon that does a very good job of insurance and eligibility of benefits verification. But there's even a better option out there called Pledge Health that will go in and literally give you a patient estimator. It'll verify insurance. It'll verify eligibility of benefits, coordination of care, whether the patient's met their deductible or not. It takes all the information that you have in your system and verifies what that patient's going to owe based on the services you are estimating that that patient's going to receive, so that you can provide that patient actual dollars on what they're going to owe, and you can collect it at that time. So there are better options than just doing insurance and verification of benefits. You want to get to the point where you know exactly what your charges are and you know exactly what that patient owes you, so that you can collect it before they walk out of your office. Again, the most important thing is you have a better chance of collecting your money when the patient is standing in front of you than you ever will have once they leave your office. And that's why you don't let the patient leave the office until you have collected all the money that is owed you.
So I've seen where the claim denials, rejections tend to be anywhere from 4 to 12%, and 12% is pretty high. In some clinics, I have seen even higher numbers. Do you think using some technology for a better job of doing a better job of insurance verification and determination of benefits could mitigate a lot of those? Because I know there are some where if the claim is not submitted properly, that's one thing. But talk to me about what other strategies they could use so that their claim rejection and denial ratios are much lower than that.
Well, first off, all providers in a practice, whether they're medical or dental, especially in medical, they should be taught and educated how to document correctly and how to bill properly. Know what modifiers each payer require. Know what codes are required. Understand the policies and procedures of each payer. So years ago in revenue cycle, everybody kept like a binder for each payer and had all their policies and procedures, communications, contract amendments, things like that. People don't maintain that information any longer. Or at least from what we've seen, they don't maintain that information any longer. Everything's digital now. Yes, a lot of this stuff is on the payer's website, but every bit of it can be downloaded, put into a digital, you know, binder, whatever you want, so that you understand and know what each payer's policies and procedures are for the services that you're rendering. So let's just say if you're going to do EKGs in your practice, what is the requirement to submit that EKG? And if you're going to do an E&M visit, an office visit on the same date, what does that payer require? Do they require a 25 modifier on top of the E&M service to make sure that it's paid as well as the EKG? Do they allow you to bill for both? You need to know this information up front. If you're going to wing it and hope that you find out afterwards, then you create a lot more issues, a lot more work, and a lot more trouble, and a lot of time between the time you provide that service and when the cash actually shows up in the door. So nice. That creates less cash flow. It creates more difficulty for the practice. And literally, you're setting yourself up for a lot more work. And if you just did it more proactively and professionally up front, you'd remove a lot of the inefficiencies, a lot of the problems, and a lot of the work that your staff are required to do because things weren't set up properly in the first place.
I love that. Talk about what are some of the technologies, not necessarily companies, but in general, what technologies, AI or machine learning, what are some of the things that are happening in the industry that are transforming RCM so that both from a, all from a payer, provider, software company's perspective, it's helping to take the RCM to the next level?
Well, there's all kinds of options for you. I mean, you can use electronic communications with the patient, whether it's encrypted text, encrypted email. That way you can communicate more freely with the patient. If you're communicating in text or email that's not encrypted, now you may potentially be violating HIPAA laws and you don't want to be doing that. So you want to make sure you're compliant with all the regulations, no matter what the communications are. But that's one way to keep communications open. Keeping, maintaining and utilizing a patient portal will help you communicate quicker and communicate better, more frequently with patients, make them aware of what their obligations are, receive payments more quickly, utilizing, systems that will allow a patient to pay online, pay on your website. There are all kinds of technology that you can use in order to help beef up your revenue cycle and just make it much more efficient. So many things that you can do there, whether it's, you know, apps that you can use, software. If you look at every aspect of the revenue cycle, and revenue cycle starts when you contract and credential with each insurance company. That's before you even open your doors. So you've got to start there, verify that's all done correctly, even to the point of making sure that every provider is covered under the same contract versus having individual contracts, and now you've got different reimbursement for every single provider, and that makes it more difficult for revenue cycle to do their job as well. Versus if you had one payment for a 99214 for every provider versus having five providers in the practice that have a different contract and a different amount. How do you verify that you even have that? Well, how do you verify you were even paid right if you don't have your contracts? And most people that are going to listen to this podcast probably don't even have their reimbursement fee schedules from their payers. So how do you run a business when you don't know what you're supposed to be paid?
Yeah.
You can't.
Interesting. Really cool. Now, a lot of times what I've seen is that there are a lot of staffing challenges. So you keep training your staff about the best practices. Are there ways through which the reliance on staff or the staff training, I mean, that's always going to be there, could be reduced through technology. Talk about what some of the automation could be put in place.
Well, there's obviously, I mean, AI is coming in and taking over pretty much everything we do nowadays. Although you've got to be able to trust but verify. So in other words, you can't just automatically, you know, utilize an AI software or something in any aspect of the revenue cycle process and assume it's going to work perfectly. You've got to validate it. You've got to vet it, make sure it's being done properly so that you don't have to worry about it as much down the road. So every once in a while, you have to double check, do checks and balances, and verify that things are working properly. But in addition to that, you can ensure that whoever you're having do your revenue cycle, whatever process they serve, whatever services that they provide you, they need to be trained, educated, and constant training to stay up on things. Everything is changing by the day. Payers change their policies and procedures. Clearinghouses may change things. So you want to stay on top of that. And the only way to do that is if you are providing ongoing training and education to your staff. They should be able to utilize that training and education right from their desk. You should subscribe to whether it's electronic coding systems, claim scrubbers, whatever the case may be. The more tools you provide to your staff, the better, more efficient, and more qualified they're going to be to do their job correctly. So I think in every aspect of revenue cycle, and again, looking at it from contracting, the beginning of contracting and credentialing, all the way through to the adjudication of the claim, every aspect of that revenue cycle needs to be evaluated and remove all the inefficiencies. Now, if you're not real familiar with revenue cycle, you're not a biller, you're not a revenue cycle expert, then there is no way you are going to be able to make these changes. You need somebody that understands all the revenue cycle aspects and can look at it and understand, look, it shouldn't be done this way. There are better ways to do it. Here are the ways we suggest. And basically, it's kind of like looking at Lean Six Sigma. Lean Six Sigma is all about removing inefficiencies and processes and systems that make it inefficient. So what are the ways to optimize everything? You got to know what the best ways are in order to be able to come up with those solutions and be able to implement them and execute them properly.
Love that. Talk about some of the best practices that you have seen being implemented in private practice or in group practices. What are some of the innovative solutions that are out there today? And another, just I'll load up with another question. What are some of the key KPIs that we should care for, especially in RCM space?
Well, first of all, as far as some of the solutions that work, I mean, many years ago, you know, I came out of restaurants into medicine, and I'm wondering why people don't get their money up front. And that's mostly because they don't know what they're supposed to collect and they don't know how to do it. And most of the staff don't like asking for money. So you need to create scripts and train people on how to do this properly, do it easily so they feel comfortable. And if you have all the policies and procedures in place, like your financial policy where it communicates all the requirements to the patient, then the staff know all they have to do is enforce those. Communicate it to the patient. You can even give them a script that says, look, your policy with your payer, your insurance company, requires that you pay your copay up front. Are you really asking us to not collect that copay and violate our contract wherein the payer will end up terminating us from network and now we can't even provide you services? So are you asking us to break the law? Now you're putting that onus back on the patient and no patient is going to tell you to break the law. So, you know, they need to understand they've got a contract with their payer and they're required to pay that copay. You've got a contract with the payer. You're required to collect it. So as long as that patient knows that, you can communicate that, put that little guilt trip on them, and they'll feel fine in collecting that, in paying that copay. But if you've got a credit card on file, you could literally just process that payment. Nobody needs to ask for it. I've got clients that literally change from collecting copays and cash and check and credit card at the front desk, and they literally charge that copay the minute the patient walks through the door. They can see that patient walk through the door. They check in. They charge the copay to the credit card. Money's in the bank right then and there. And that patient now sits down. It doesn't take any much longer for them to, you know, they don't have to write a check anymore. They don't have to give you the credit card. You've already taken care of that, and your money's collected and in the bank. That is probably the quickest way to ensure that your money's in the bank, by having credit and debit card on file. But then, you know, I can start talking about every other system and process that makes it proactive, that's going to create more revenue, more cash flow, much quicker than most practices, you know, do today.
So what are some key KPIs that as an RCM leader or as a practice leader I should look into on a daily basis or a weekly basis or a monthly basis?
Well, that's a very good question, because I ask that question all the time when I'm interviewing either billing people to hire for clients or even billing companies. And I must tell you that most revenue cycle people can't even communicate what the good KPIs are. So that tells me right there that that person doesn't know their job very well. Some of the main KPIs that I'm going to look at is days in AR. That tells me how many days since the date of service it's going to take you to collect that cash. And you want that as little as possible. So, for instance, practices that put credit and debit card on file in their practice and implement it, I've got practices that have zero AR over 60 days, and I do mean zero. And that's because they collect everything within the 60 days. That means insurance and the patient responsibilities collected by them. You should have very little AR over 60 days. If you do have any AR over that, it shouldn't be more than 4 or 5%, and it certainly shouldn't be anything more than 90 days. If you've got AR over 90 days, there's a problem, and there are things you can do to remove and fix that. Unless, of course, you're doing auto and workers' comp, in those specialties, you're going to end up having much more AR, and you need to understand that, because those type of claims take longer to adjudicate, and a lot of them are contested by attorneys and courts. So in a regular practice, whether it's dental or medical, you should be able to collect all your AR within 60 days max.
And what can providers do to collect funds from, or what's owed to them from insurance companies faster? You know, sometimes from a collection to date of service, it could take a very long time. When I say long time, like anywhere from 2 weeks to 90 days to 180 days. What are some of the strategies that you've seen where you could reduce that days in AR significantly, especially when it comes to the payer portion side of things?
Well, there's a very unknown law in America that's been around for literally 50 years. This year is the 50th anniversary of that law, and it's called ERISA. And ERISA laws protect 80% of the claims, actually about 83% of the claims in America. And those are all claims that are sponsored or issued by an employer that is not a government entity or a religious organization. And if those employers are not a government entity or religious organization, then that policy is covered under ERISA laws. So are Affordable Care Act policies out of the exchange. So is Medicare, Medicare Advantage, if the patient is still an employed individual and the and their employer sponsors or issues that plan. Okay, so if the employer pays for any portion of that premium or issues that policy through the group, then it is covered under ERISA. And ERISA has three areas. It's literally a Department of Labor website or a Department of Labor policy and law. And that's why most people, literally about 98% in healthcare, don't understand the ERISA laws. And ERISA protects those claims. So if you are familiar with the laws, like for an urgent care practice, if you've got a claim, that the payer needs to pay it in 15 days because it's an urgent claim. If it's a regular medical practice, the payer has to pay that in 30 days. It doesn't matter what their contract says. Contracts for payers violate federal laws every day of the week. And they get away with it because everyone listening to this podcast doesn't know the laws. And they're going to, it's no different than, you know, when a payer comes back and tells you we want to recoup on a claim we paid you a year ago. If it's an ERISA claim, they're not allowed to recoup on that claim unless they notify the patient and the employer first and they get the permission to recoup on that claim. And they can never recoup on a current claim to pay back, pay them back for an old claim that belonged to another patient. Again, that's a violation of federal law as well. So there are many rules and regulations under ERISA that will protect 80% of your claims. And if you know those laws, you can force the payer to comply with them. But communicating with the claims department isn't going to fix that. You need to communicate with the attorneys, the compliance department, and the CEO's office of the payer. And I can guarantee you if you send a letter to the CEO's office, they're going to cease and desist on all these illegal practices because they know you're going to copy the Department of Labor and make them aware that they are violating federal law.
Interesting perspective. What are some of, just to take what you just explained, take it to, what are some of the changes in healthcare regulations that were recently passed or are about to be passed that could improve the RCM function in a business or cause issues within RCM function? Can you talk through some of those regulations or compliance issues?
Well, sure. I mean, there were recent policies and procedures. So even on RCM, a lot of people don't realize that the No Surprises Act that was passed in 2020 requires that you update your provider directories with every payer every 90 days. If you don't do that and don't validate that information, the payer has every right to terminate your contract and terminate your credentialing. And you're not going to know that until you start getting all these denials. So that creates a huge issue with revenue cycle. So once you know that that law is required, you need to maintain those provider directories with every payer every 90 days for every location for every provider. An additional law that was passed recently is the Transparency and Coverage Act. And that required every payer to publish their contracted rates with every NPI in the United States. That means that you can find out what your neighbor and what your competitor is getting paid for the same services that you're getting paid if you know how to obtain that data and you're willing to pay for it because it doesn't come for free. And you can't just go out to a payer's website and download that information because it's all done in special type files, in a specific file type, and you have to have the software and the knowledge on how to manipulate that data to read it properly. But that's also going to help you understand if you don't have your fee schedules from the insurance company, which you should have obtained when you got contracted and credentialed, now you can obtain it by getting that data from the payer's website and downloading it and making sure that when you are paid, your billing people know that, hey, if I got paid $140 from United Healthcare for a level 3 office visit and yet my contracted rate is $155, now you know that United Healthcare shortchanged you, which happens every single day of the week because insurance companies lie, cheat, and steal every day of the week. So you need to hold them accountable to make sure they do their job right. And the only way to do that is if you know what your reimbursement amounts are based on your contract. So that's another way that will help you get that information if you don't have your fee schedules and your contracts, but you should go out to every payer, request copies of fully executed contracts. That means 2 signatures are on it, along with all amendments, along with the fully current documented fee schedule that tells you what you're supposed to be paid by CPT code.
So if I look at, if someone is working with you, you could transform their RCM practices to so that where their collections will be better, provider-payer relationships will be better, and then the claim will have a higher success ratio. And some of the things that you talked about, having credit card on file, be able to get the right credentialing, make sure the insurance verification and eligibility of benefits is done properly, and then claims are checked properly. Anything else that you want to add to that?
Well, it's all about, you can trust, but you always verify. So anybody you've got doing any work for you, you've got to follow up and provide some oversight. Somebody has to. And the only people that can do that is those that know what the job duties are and whether they're being done properly. There is nobody that can validate somebody's work unless they know how to do that work. So if an office manager doesn't know what the billing company or billing staff's responsibilities are and knows exactly what they should be doing and documenting, then they shouldn't be following up on it. And somebody has to do some checks and balances to verify that things are being done properly. You don't have to do every claim. You have to do every so often and do spot checks here and there. No differently than reconcile your collections on the front desk every day. If you don't do a daily reconciliation with your schedule, how do you know somebody's not stealing money and pocketing it and walking out with it? Even if it's a check. People set up checking accounts all the time on the business name and get that money, and that can be a front desk receptionist that does that. So you really have to do spot checks on everything in the process so that you know and can validate that, yes, we are collecting every dime that's due to us and nobody is embezzling money out of the practice.
Yeah, those are some good points. Just pivoting to, you know, some rapid fire, tell us about anything, any productivity tips that you may have for anyone who's working with you or anyone who wants to take away something from it.
Well, I mean, you know, we can go through with any practice that contacts us. We can do an assessment. We pinpoint every single piece of information on every claim that is being done incorrectly. We look at their policies and procedures. We're going to make recommendations. But we don't only just provide you a report. We're going to provide you recommendations. We can provide you even suggestions on how much revenue you're actually losing because of these poor policies and procedures and what potential additional revenue you're going to capture from implementing new policies and procedures. And then we not only communicate recommendations, we help implement it, and then we help validate that it's being done correctly. That all has to be part of the package. Otherwise, you're only doing a piece of it, and then nothing guarantees that you're going to do it properly until you've verified everything.
On personal front, David, what books are you reading? Any books you recommend for your audience?
I don't read a lot of books. I read a lot of articles. I keep up on business because books are old information, and you're not going to see a lot of revenue cycle books being written. But we do I'm a member of an organization called the National Society of Certified Healthcare Business Consultants. largest organization of its kind of in America, and it's all got healthcare business consultants in it. We do a lot of training and education of our own consultants. I'm a past president, and I speak all the time on additional policies and procedures on revenue cycle. I speak on practice annual checkups, what you should be looking at. There's an awful lot of information out there, but from the standpoint on books, I don't have any books that I would recommend, although tell you that our organization is writing a book on medical practice management and all the policies and procedures, and our organization will be publishing that in the next year or so, and that would be a great book to read. But anything that has to do with revenue cycle, I'd read about it as long as it's updated and recent. And just keep reading articles. There are a ton of articles out on the internet about revenue cycle, and there's a lot of information on what you can do to pare down that AR and to collect every dime due you the minute it's due.
Are you watching any favorite shows or any movies recently that you want to share?
Well, I just watched the first, the first iteration of, Horizon and, the Western. And, I thought it was a great movie. So we just saw that last weekend. I'll definitely be watching the next three. But yeah, I've got regular shows I watch. None of them have to do, or not many have to do with healthcare.
Yeah,
I don't want to be watching healthcare when I do it every day, all day long.
Any favorite vacation spot?
Cancun and the beach.
Cancun and the beach.
Yeah, we go to Cancun each year and the beach every year, if at all possible.
Most frequently used app on your phone?
1Password.
1Password.
It houses every password I have for every website, every software. It is the most efficient software I use. I never have to remember it. It sets them up for me and even allows me to copy and paste them into every website.
Awesome. David, thank you for being on this show. I'm sure all the audience here are going to get a ton of benefit by listening to this. Thank you so much for coming to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.